Welcome all. Once again, just another fun laid back check. We have Brendan from The Real Review. How are you, sir?
I am very well. How are you?
Very good. Can't complain. Kevin from Gutting the Sacred Cow.
What's good, fellas?
The sky. Jason from Genre Exposure is back.
Hey, everyone.
Back with the vengeance.
That's right.
So just as a fun, again, just add on, just recognizing actors from the 007 franchise and just other kinds of projects and seeing which ones kind of stood out to us. Kevin, what made you make time for the various James Bond adventures?
What made me to make time for them? I got caught on them young, I guess. I don't know, 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there. They're always on. They're on TV, and all the kind of roped you in there. And it was the edited version you saw on Channel 7 or whatever, and then ABC, whatever. And Bond hooked me at an early age, and then they had TBS at the marathons, and away we went. Got hooked in early.
Nice. Very nice. And would you say it was just what was just making it just so appealing to you, where you're like, yeah, you know, I kind of want to check out other stuff by these filmmakers or these actors?
The actors. I mean, Connery is the one and only Bond. We know that. So wasn't hard to make a leap from to go to Connery to go to other things. I mean, he was in Jesus Christ. I'm blanking. Hunt for Red October. That was it. Hunt for Red October, The Rock, Connie, you know, some stuff in the 80s here and there. Of course, Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade is fantastic. He takes that to a whole new level playing Indiana's dad. So, not a far cry for me to get into more Connery stuff, though, until like around the 90s. I think I said the 70s stuff. With Zardoz, no thank you. And the 80s.
Too 80s much Connery stuff, love.
Yeah. 80s Connery. I mean, The Russia House? No, not really. I don't recall. I got to think of what he was in. But mostly 90s Connery, when it's kind of starting to wind down, is where he kicked ass. What's that, Jason?
Well, I hate to interrupt, but you're missing one very important 80s film that he was in.
I am, too.
The Untouchables.
Of course. Yeah, God damn it. You're 100% right. And it was fantastic.
All the Sidney Lumet movies, all worth it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's he's fantastic. Anyway, didn't he win the Oscar for that, too?
He did.
Yep. Yeah, rightfully so. Finally, the Oscars got something right. They've been dog shit since. That's for sure. Roger Moore, though, I've never given two shits what he's been in. Easily probably the second. Boy, you know what? Nope. I'll take that back. The worst Bond of all time by a little bit, but not that good.
Okay.
Nothing really. No, listen.
Comes out
facts,
swinging.
Gentlemen, these are facts. No, but what's Roger Moore else been in? I mean, was he in Cannonball Run? Wasn't crazy about that. And after that, what else? He was in this.
Escape from Athena. He had some funny stories about. And Vic Armstrong, who did a lot of James Bond stunt work and later, you know, was Harrison Ford's stunt double and coordinator on the Indiana Jones movies. He talked about how he basically rescued that movie, and Roger Moore just had a fun attitude the whole time, but they really hated the director, who was the infamous Peter Cosmatos, who would work on basically be a ghost director on Stallone's projects. And it was just so funny. It's just like, yeah, the minute I jumped in, Roger really was enjoying himself even more. He had something else to do besides tell jokes to Lee Marvin and company.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, so Moore didn't really do all that much. I mean, like I said, he was in The Quest with Jean-Claude Van Damme, if you saw that piece of shit, or as we call it, Bloodsport 2.0, watered down.
Wow, man.
Terrible, terrible film.
Well, in Moore's defense, he did play the character of James Bond for like, 25, 30 years?
So. Yeah, I was never surprised to see him in various B movies. There's this one, Naked Face, which is a decent mystery from the otherwise infamous canon films. But yeah, he kind of, from that point on, he was starring in TV movies of the week and sometimes would be pretty visual or intense and dramatic. But yeah, for the most part, I think he didn't really enjoy his time halfway there. So in all fairness, I mean, he's just going with the flow. It's like people hire you based on whether they like to want to work with you versus what they know you from. And yeah, he's just grateful for it.
Yeah. He was Bond for like 20 years, I think, because View to a Kill is 85 and Wow, what a glorious piece of shit that was, huh? Wow, it was terrible. Brosnan, if I looked him up outside of Bond, not really. He was in Thomas Crown Affair. I didn't see it because of him. He was secondary in Mrs. Doubtfire, but that was before Bond. And after that, he's made a lot of just schlocky spy movies or what have you. And then
you leave November Man out of this.
direct the movie stuff. What's that, bud?
You leave November Man out of this, my friend. That was pretty
cool. So do the general public in the box office. So there.
Jeez. Well, fair. Timothy Dalton, I think you'd dig. He had a lot of hysterical TV roles, like Chuck.
Dalton, again, another guy. What else besides The Rocketeer was he in? I just don't remember.
You might like him on the show, Chuck. He's pretty funny on that.
Flash Gordon?
Yeah, Flash Gordon.
There you go, Flash Gordon. That was before Bond. It was pretty awesome. But
He had a great, hilarious part in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
God, I hate that film.
Really?
I bailed out.
Oh, man. I love it. I think he's great in it, too. He's so funny.
I'm not an Edgar Wright fan, but I will admire just the passion of making a buddy parody movie. And Dalton definitely stole the show in that one.
He was having so much fun.
He's basically just making fun of all the Sherlock Holmes kind of bad guys who are just, they're smooth criminals. And then the minute that, you know, they just know someone's onto them, they start to make all the stupidest mistakes possible, you know, sticks out with like a sore thumb. And you're like, how are you not guilty? Of course you're the bad guy.
I keep realizing I skipped over a bunch of Bonds. Lazenby did one. I don't recall anything else besides
The Man from Hong Kong.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, perfect.
Pretty much it.
He's basically playing James Bond if he were a bad guy. So
right. And then I guess Craig would be the most I would say versatile Bond since Connery. I mean, Layer Cake. He did one with Rachel Weisz.
You should check out this one British miniseries he was in called Sword of Honor, where he plays like this World War One veteran kind of adapting for World War Two type espionage. It's a very cool tactical
film. That's cool. No.
Was he in Munich or am I making that up?
Yeah, he was Munich. Don't fuck with
him. Yeah, he was in Munich. All right.
And a War Knives Horse. He's I think he was really guy. Great
in Knives Out.
Knives Out was amazing.
He's in Defiance.
Defiance is
with the Jewish resistance guys. Yeah.
That bad guy in Tomb Raider and bit parts. He's the abusive prison guard in the Power of One, Morgan Freeman.
Oh, and don't forget Road to Perdition.
Yep, there you go.
Excellent film. Yeah, I rewatched that not too long ago.
Mr. Executioner,
He's a real shitbag in that movie,
And they put a stormtrooper.
The second Star Wars sequel of late.
Yeah.
definitely the bright spot in that horrible film. I will say that.
Well, you're not a fan of The Force Awakens?
I'm not a fan of any of the final three sequels.
I'm not an Abrams fan, but awful. I can't blame him for doing a fun cameo.
Wasn't Prince Harry in one of those two in a stormtrooper outfit?
That's what they say. Yeah, I don't know who he was, but yeah.
Yeah, you know.
It's going to happen. Someone asks you just don't ask.
Those Star Wars sequels were just beyond. Rise of Skywalker is the second worst of all 10. right on. Well,
hopefully Daniel Craig can make an appearance on the Mandalorian shows. That'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
I would be down for that.
Yeah.
So, why do you think these villain actors, also from James Bond, like they can do nothing the rest of their life, but they are just immortalized, and it doesn't matter if they're the best or the worst James Bond or Bond girl or person to play M or Moneypenny is like, we were talking a bit about that the other night, and it's like Bernard Leigh appeared in a bunch of those James Bond knockoffs in Italy, basically playing M. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Lois Maxwell, same kind of deal, would play. She was in one with Sean Connery's brother, Neil Connery. That was on the Street Science
Operation Theater. 007.
Or something like that. Operation Oh Brother or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it has lots of different titles, like all good Italian films should.
I mean, look, the guy who plays Sean William Scott, who played Stifler, I mean, that guy has been typecast since 1999 as a Stifler type. So I say you wear that out to those wheels come out to a nub. That's what I would. That's can't blame him for doing that.
You mentioned Munich earlier. One fun fact we noticed is the bad guy from Moonraker also has a brief part as like a weapons courier or contact in that. Also, God. So we're like, it is kind of a James Bond tribute half the time by Spielberg. And I mean, that's why he did Indiana Jones. He's like, okay, screw you, Broccoli. So you're not going to let me do a Bond movie. I'll do my own Bond.
Yeah.
You know, I think the outlook on Bond movies have certainly changed over the last 30 years. You know, we've went
because they're always trying to be with the times, change up the style a bit.
We've went from having like Robert Davi playing a villain,
right? He still gets called that on the street sometimes. He'll be like, people come up to him, he says, and they're like, Sanchez. Yeah.
Like we've went from,
you know what? And License to Kill wasn't that bad.
It was so funny. It would be so confusing. Half these James Bond movies would have probably a 5 or 6 out of 10 on most movie sites. And you'd go into the TV guide or TV viewer, and often it would have like a 3 out of 4 star rating. So you're like, I think, yeah, everyone got with the times and rented them nonstop. So they caught on over time, most of them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And now what we're finding with Bond movies is they're attracting, you know, Oscar winners like Rami Malek. We wanted to be the bad guy, you know. We've now moved on from having, you know, guys.
Of all people, yeah.
Yeah, it's respectable.
Well, also, don't forget Javier Bardem in Skyfall.
Yeah.
It's respectable. I think they got some prestige cinema almost.
You need that extra diamond in the rough. And I think, didn't they get some nominations for, like, best sound editing or effects?
Yeah, I think it won. Well, I know it's one of the... Not proud about, but you know, I think they won best song for Skyfall, maybe.
There you go, best cinematography.
Adele, right?
Yeah, there you go.
So, I mean, they are now starting to get a bit more recognition as they would under the kind of Roger Moore era that were a bit sort of, you know, a bit embarrassing, maybe.
Right.
But, you know,
that's what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. And loads of people grew up under the Roger Moore era. So, Roger Moore's a lot of people was James Bond because
he's who I started watching.
Well, that's such a good point because it is kind of like with Batman or even Sherlock Holmes, whoever you grew up with is your icon of that era. And so then, you know, or which version of the Twilight Zone or Star Trek did you grow up with? You know, it's just, it depends. So it's like, yeah, I mean, what you're introduced to in that moment or over time is kind of who you grow the most attached to. So it would be interesting to see, you know, how many are bigger on, you know, Craig versus Brosnan versus Connery versus, you know, Dalton.
Well, I mean, who do you guys think is the best Bond? Who's your Bond?
It has to be Connery. Listen, if you say Craig, I'm not going to shit on you, but it's one of those two.
Okay.
I think they all bring the most part, you know, even though many have made good points on how Roger Moore kind of varies based on the material. I know it's always a fun, even just doing it with my family. Like, if for some reason my siblings don't want to give Moore or Dalton any moment of their time, but they'll do Connery, Craig, and Brosnan. And my father's kind of the same way, where he's like, yeah, I'll watch any of these, but if Moore's on it, then it just, you know, let's change the channel. And so I'm kind of more is like, I kind of watch a lot of the Connery ones more often, but I get more enjoyment from Brosnan's era. So, I mean, it's a tough cookie, you know, too.
But the Brosnan ones, I mean, Goldeneye is great. I'm sure we're all going to agree on that.
But
Tomorrow Never Dies, it's okay, but those last two are fucking unwatchable.
The Brosnan films are my least awful. Favorite. They're my least favorite.
No, it's all good. I watch Tomorrow Never Dies and World. It's not enough all the time. We didn't need Die Another Day because that was just basically an expensive Vin Diesel car commercial that just happened to feature the Bond commercial.
Yeah.
And it was just annoying because, like, his video game, Everything or Nothing, is a lot of fun because it was just a throwback. Like, yeah, it had
GoldenEye.
Like, all the actors contributed, did some voice capture. William Dafoe was playing a protege of Max Zorin, you know, Chris Walken's character.
That's cool.
That was fun. And you got to fight Jaws. So there's some connections to the other Bond movies.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I think Brosnan is the perfect Bond in the wrong type of movie.
Well, you know, and that's just it was changing hands and getting more expensive, and same kind of deal with Dalton, where, you know, one minute you got a camp fest, then the next minute you got a serious movie. That's a lot for the audience to take in a short amount of time. So, I mean, I don't blame any of the actors. I don't blame, I just blame them on using, they just got to get different script writers, especially after Craig's era. Is like, that, especially with how they're doing the whole, this is canon, this isn't canon, it's all tied together. It's like, well, I'm sorry, Bond is basically a code name. There's just no way.
Well, I hope to go back to a more episodic type. I don't need everything to be interconnected, especially when it's when it's kind of forced.
I totally concur, because especially with how, you know, one minute he's trying to be like the Bourne Identity, then the next minute he's having all these Dark Knight, Die Hard type villains, and you're just like, whatever you are, just make it stand your own ground. Don't do the whole, oh, and this is connected to that, and see what we did there.
Yeah, it was obviously forced in the Craig films.
But you have to watch 4 movies to understand what's happening in the 5th movie. obviously,
you don't need to watch Police Academy in order to understand what's going on.
Oh, that's where you're wrong, good sir. You need to know what happened, because Mauser tries to come in and knock Captain Harris's Academy out, and then they have a fight in the 3rd one to see which Academy survives, and then 4
I'm just being a
is a goddamn is a trip, and then part 5 and 6 are fucking terrible. But
blasphemy, sir. Blasphemy. They're all pretty dumb and pretty hysterical. And
Police Academy 4 is gold. Gold.
Yes, they are.
Hey, Brendan, you know which why? Was your favorite Bond? Because I was Bond. Sick.
For me, it's I've sort of grown up with Daniel Craig. Mm-hmm. You know, I've went to see all his movies. So it is one of those, it's a generational thing. Whoever Bonds you grow up with, that's the one you're sort of attached to.
That's so true. Can you think of anyone who hasn't seen at least one James Bond movie in a theater at one point in their life? You know, it's just,
I hope not, but you know, there's probably that person out there.
Unless they never were involved in spy movies, but it says a lot, you know, when you can think of, it's like, this is one of the few franchises, it's always been there almost every generation since the 60s, you know? Mm-hmm.
But even before Daniel Craig, I mean, I was so invested in Pierce Brosnan, but just playing GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64.
There you go. Your game tie-in.
And Brosnan was, it's, obviously, I'm on the other side of the pond over here in Britain. Bond is very, very down your throat all over the place. So we get Bond everywhere. You know, every day on the TV, you'll turn on and a Bond movie's on. So, you know, Bond is, you know, Britain is the where the character is born, you know.
Is it still a Christmas tradition to play James Bond movies there?
It kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weekly tradition.
What's your version of AMC or Paramount Network in overseas?
Yeah, so we've obviously got like, we've got like BBC. So you guys have got BBC.
Oh, yes. They are playing them nonstop every year now. Yeah,
so I mean, just tonight, The Spy Who Loved Me was on.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah. So, I mean,
watch it again. It doesn't hold. I'm telling you, I rewatched it months ago. Man, they are bad.
I got a soft spot for them. I just picked up when
the first one I saw last year. It's pretty good.
I got the box set, all Blu-rays, all of them. And I went through and mainlined like one a night because my wife hadn't seen them. So I was kind of watching them, you know, through her for the first time. And seeing them all again, and some of them I don't think I've even seen on widescreen before, because I always watched it on television. So
right.
I actually had a new appreciation for Roger Moore, because he's the one I grew up with, but I wouldn't say he's the best Bond.
They still have a lot of special movies. Features, though, right?
Oh yeah, there's a ton of like mini docs and things like that on there.
The opening of The Spy Who Loved Me is probably one of the most iconic. Mm-hmm. You know, when he pulls the parachute and you know the great
skiing down the mountain.
Yeah, skiing, and that's probably one of the most iconic openings.
It's great.
You know, the car going underwater, and as no, the Spy Who Loved Me.
That you're right. That's all good, but the bullshit with the figure skater, all the nonsense. Like my thing with Roger Moore is this: at no point do you really think he's capable of saving the world. Yeah, he's good for a giggle here and
wasn't
there.
Wasn't that For Your Eyes Only
fight? But overall, like there,
I think that is
Roger Moore can get taken by a lot of people.
I think you're mixing up the two Bond movies. I don't recall Skates and Spy Who Loved Me.
The Spy Who Loved Me was the Russian spy, XXX, and he has to team up with her. And they're like in Egypt, Jesus and it's Christ. Got Jaws.
You know, you're right. I always confuse the two, because they're right after each other.
It's easy to do.
I always confuse the two of them. Wait, which? Oh, Barbara Bach was the one that was XXX. She's fucking hot.
Yeah.
Was hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. And which one is the one where they're underwater with the guy who wants to have Nirvana, and he ends up feeding people through the, he hits a button, they slide it through the sharks.
Yeah, that's The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah.
Okay.
The villain's weak. He's basically just another.
Oh, he's terrible.
Yeah, he's basically Drax from Moonraker, same character.
Who's also terrible. What's the other one I'm thinking of? Is that the, so? That's not the, okay. What's the
you're
one
thinking
the,
of? For Your Eyes Only.
That's it. Where Jaws is chasing him in the pyramid and shit. Oh god, that was terrible.
That's The Spy Who Loved Me.
All right, I'm fucking awful in this game. I keep intertwining those two.
Yeah,
to no avail.
For Your Eyes Only is the one with the girl who wants revenge for the guy who killed her parents on the yacht.
And yes, the Greek, like, the Greek parents. I remember that part.
Right, and there's like a really cool ski scene. That is a cool sequence.
Right. And the Lotus underwater, and then but the psych gags are just so like hacky, you know. People are fainting, and the fish comes out of the thing. Like, oh, shut up! Like that's where they lose me with the.
Oh, you mean like stuff. Moonraker, where the pigeon does a double take?
Yeah, oh, please.
You know what? There's something about that I miss. It's just that.
That shamelessness of just like, hey, we're gonna.
We're
just
having
go
a good time.
It.
We're having fun, as opposed to the brooding. Rough Daniel Craig films, which mostly I like, but I mean, it's also like enough of the torture and the, you know.
Right. We saw him getting testy whipped enough. We don't need any more of that.
Yeah. How about something fun? That doesn't have to be stupid fun, but how about something kind of fun? You know, I hope that's the direction they go in next.
Yeah.
I mean, the only good thing, obviously, Daniel Craig's Bond was probably the most accurate towards Ian Fleming. Yeah. You mean he was this kind of roughed up agent that just likes a good fist fight. You know, a lot of the other versions and portrayals are don't really go down that route. Connery sticks at people. You Only Live Twice, you know, he does beat up people with some sticks. But yeah, Craig's is probably the most accurate out of them all. But yeah. You miss
that sense of adventure. Like,
yeah. You miss that lightheartedness, I think.
No, I do think Casino Royale is one of the best Bond films ever. It's in my top three, probably.
It's definitely there somewhere. Because I mean,
sorry, which one was your top three? I missed that.
Oh, Casino Royale, Craig's first one.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Is in my top three.
How can I mean?
And God, probably the longest poker game ever. You know, it's like, but you so cool how they make that part of not only just the character more so, but also just a huge key plot point, you know, while the rest of the time it was just kind of an intro, you know, it's like, it's so cool to see him actually, you know, it's incorporated into the complex plot.
And it sounds really bizarre, but the game of poker becomes a side character to the whole movie.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's the cards are like the characters that are, you know, driving the plot forward. You know, I don't know how to play poker, but I had no idea what was going on, so I was just...
But you still followed it, though, right? You still knew what was happening.
Yeah. So I was just
followed by a stairway fight and more betrayals. And pretty cool.
Getting stabbed and had to shock himself to get the goddamn poison out, I think it was. I mean, it's all right.
Yeah.
That was good. It was amazing.
It's a good one, man.
Although Lazenby only did one on Her Majesty's Secret Service, is probably one of the best Bond movies.
Agreed. Hard agree.
And I think, you know, in recent years, it's got that kind of respect back, I think, over the last sort of 10, 15 years.
I still need to rewatch it a bit.
It's been reevaluated. It's really good.
It's one of those,
I like the plot, you know? But I don't like the Bond portrayal.
There's something about him I like, though, because he's more vulnerable, you know, without being too
vulnerable.
Emotional.
You know, he's a
because that ending, you know, when his wife gets shot, it's like you feel it. I mean, and there's and parts in the movie where Bond is like scared and nervous.
The score from John Barry was so good, so much that, you know, Hans Zimmer.
I love that theme song. It's one of the best theme songs.
Even David Arnold, both those guys. I can't imagine James Bond without either of those guys.
Yeah.
Bond scores.
Well, but it's got to be Barry. Barry's been on since Jump Street, and the whole theme that he did, it's everything. I mean, I don't know how many different songs I have, especially Thunderball. I have my phone where it's just instrumental.
Those trumpets are what do it, you know?
Yeah.
That's great. And oh, wait. Since we're on the subject, how about favorite Bond theme real quick?
I really like Chris Cornell.
Yes.
Great one.
As soon as that hits.
You Know My Name. Yeah, that's a good one.
Particularly the movie version with the orchestra, it's really powerful, and it's just that's the start of the Craig era. It's really, really, and that was the kind of the first glimpse of Craig being Bond, that first kind of gun barrel scene in Casino Royale.
Yeah,
pulls the trigger, and
it depends on the day too. I mean,
yeah. What if you had to pick?
Apples and oranges to me. It really depends on my.
I'll go first, so you can. I'll go next, so you can make fun of me. Living Daylights.
You're gonna pick.
It's either Living Daylights or A View to a Kill. No, I'm talking about just this, the songs, not the movie.
Living Daylights is cool.
Yeah, and A View to a Kill is a great.
Who did Living Daylights theme? Oh my God!
A View to a Kill. That was Wings.
That was Duran Duran.
Okay, Wings who's the one was, with Wings?
Live and Let Die.
Correct.
Oh, that's fucking gotta be top three.
That's a good song, yeah.
Yeah.
But see, Tina Turner. Don't joke. Don't mock me.
I might throw a curveball. I think the two best ones are Shirley Bassey doing Goldfinger, and I think it's Adele doing Skyfall. I think they're both powerful. I mean, they built the shit out of those two songs.
I like Adele, but I can't get into her theme.
it's good. I think they're good.
I mean, Shirley Bassey for sure.
Shirley Bassey. Yes.
The only weaker one I can think of is Quantum of Solace. Was that?
I like that theme, but I know people hate on it.
I can't even remember it.
It's Jack White and Alicia Keys.
That's why. Yeah.
Which one was that you said? Jack White.
Quantum of Solace.
Oh God, damn it! Well, first of all, that film was terrible, so I should try and block that in my mind. I forgot they even.
Another Way to Die. I think the song's called.
Okay.
A Better Way to Die. Yeah.
Yeah, but
that was a disappointing movie.
The Bond themes are very much the same as the Bond actors. No, you can find positives in them all.
True. Very true.
Even like Octopussy.
Well, it's definitely the most subjective franchise. That is definitely for sure. And speaking of themes, how about what's the best kind of plot? I like the
Cold War stuff. That's always my favorite.
Cold War stuff. Anything involving a satellite is just kind of gold for me. Even when it's garbage like Moonraker, just because you just know is like, yeah, if there's any franchise that's going to make good use of a satellite, it's got to be this franchise, because other movies, they'll throw it in like as a plot device, but they won't do anything, make good on it. You know, it's just to sell the box cover art. It's like, damn it, it wasn't in there enough to justify that box cover art.
I think I would choose Thunderball again, because just, I mean, I'm just a sucker for all that underwater fighting with the sharks and all that shit in the Bahamas. Retrieving the nuclear weapon from the crash plane. I don't know. I really dug that.
It really excites you. Right.
It did, man. It was pretty damn dope.
You know, I mean, Die Another Day has an interesting concept of Bond being captured and being a prisoner. It's just so poorly executed.
Yeah,
very
invisible cars.
That's one of the worst. I gotta say,
I like the idea of Bond being captured at the start and being a prisoner and being vulnerable for a change.
Right, but, involving North and South Korea war, but then it got it's just such a shame because like Holly Berry was supposed to be a Bond girl, and it's like that would have been a fun. Standalone movie.
They wanted to do a spinoff of her. Yeah, that wasn't going to happen. No.
And you're just like, that movie's just so awful. It's like, yeah, no, all bets are off.
And then you have Madonna fencing. That was even more laughable.
Ooh.
I do like the sword fight in it, though. That's a good part.
It does get your interest just for like those 10 minutes it's on screen. Yeah, because
it keeps escalating.
All the lesbian double entendres, you mean?
Oh, my God. Not that kind of sword fight.
Yeah.
Anyway, would you just say that this is still probably in most people's like top 10 franchises?
Oh, how could it not be?
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. So many people are, I see a lot. I've had some horror fans on here before, and some of them will just be like, horror is wrongly, you know, mocked. And then they'll start mocking comedies and action movies. I'm like, oh, well,
yeah,
but every horror franchise, it has one, like, well, I don't know. I like Nightmare on Elm Street may be the difference, but I think there are two really legit good films. Friday the 13th, it's only one. Halloween, I mean, it's been rebooted twice, for Christ's sakes. Don't get me wrong, the original Halloween's great, and the new one that just came out, not the Halloween Kills, that sucked.
Oh God,
the first reboot was good. But all the horror genres, they may have one that's good, and then the rest are straight up fucking terrible. So
that's trying just
like
too.
Desecrate I'll, like if they were to say, oh, horror is better than I don't know Indiana Jones, Star Wars,
even though Indiana Jones has a horror entry. So it's just like it's just so funny how they'll do the whole, hey, how can anyone like that movie? It's terrible, and then they'll watch a lot of Friday the 13th and Nightmare. And
yeah, but
like,
I may be the most poor. I mean, batting averages, all the horror batting averages are fucking trash.
I may be the most poor nerd here.
We know 84 sucks, but it's batting 750. It's probably
not. That's just it. I like a good horror fantasy, but yeah, after a while, it's just like, so after a while, it becomes a so bad it's good kind of quality, you know?
Yeah, it depends on the movie and the franchise. I would argue there's lots of good movies in the Friday the 13th in the franchise. It's really about what you're after.
Because, I mean, those are fun and campy, you know? It's not...
Right. It's about it's like with James Bond. If you want fun and campy, get a Roger Moore, or maybe a Pierce Brosnan.
They're party movies as opposed to serious movies. But yeah, it's just like... And don't get me wrong, there's plenty that... kept me alive before we got to found footage in torture porn era. This is like, I love Wishmaster, I love Candyman, and the Hellraisers. But
when No Time to Die came out last year, I wrote about how the last 2 years, you know, movie theaters were crippled with the pandemic, and I wrote when I went to see No Time to Die, as soon as that gun barrel sequence hit, when I was sitting in the theater, that's when cinema came back for me.
Yeah,
and you know, and there's only so many.
It was still pretty sold out. Yeah.
There's only so many franchises that can do that for me. But Bond, that was 2 years of movie theaters kind of staggering. But Bond was back. Cinema was back.
That dragged you back into the cinema to see Bond.
That feeling was back, and I don't think any other film could have done it at that point other than Bond. Maybe I'm talking from this side of the world. But
it was pretty big here too. So
Yeah. I mean, so just
I couldn't think of anyone who hadn't seen it.
Just sitting there and hearing that sequence again, that ba-dum bam, ba-dum bam, ba-dum ba-dum. You're sitting, you're going, it was a sense of relief, really. That Bond's back in the big screen. Everything's slowly getting back to normality. Hopefully. And there's not many franchises that I can say do that for me currently. So I do think Bond is still way up there, And the thing with Bond is, as we talk about, these are the Bonds that people grow up with, guys will have kids and they'll sit down and they'll show them Connery, they'll show them Brosnan, they'll show them Moore. So, the Bond will live on for years and years and years. So yeah, it was definitely, and wherever they go next, it's exciting to see where they go next. Obviously this is the 60th year of Bond as well. Anything could happen. And, Daniel Craig was good. I thought Spectre was probably, Spectre and Quantum of Solace were probably his two weakest films.
Agreed,
yep. It bowed out on a high, and it was No Time to Die. I was harsh on it when I first seen it, and I thought, it was not quite the same. But I seen it again, and I understood what it meant more. It was when you look into it, and you find out this is Daniel Craig's final performance, such an iconic character that he's played since 2006. It doesn't seem that long compared to Roger Moore, but. It was everything that I'd hoped it would be, the fact that they brought certain elements back, like Timothy Dalton's car from The Living Daylights.
I love that car.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service theme.
Sales definitely went up based on what they're used in?
So they brought all these different elements of Bond back, and if it was a fan service, it worked. I loved No Time to Die, and I was sad that Craig was leaving because it might have had another movie in him. But the way that they finished it off was it was obviously it's nothing that we've ever seen before in a Bond movie, so I think that's why it was such a hit.
That's true.
Given James Bond an end, really. Mm-hmm. And wherever they go, as I said, they can go anywhere, and hopefully, I'd like to see them go younger again. Let's have a a late 20s
actor. Definitely get some new writers.
Yeah.
Because they've exhausted all the storylines to where it's like virtually every era, like they were writing for both, you know, Brosnan and Craig. They just repeated themselves way too much to where it's like, okay, so no more killer satellites, no more, you know, revenge. They got to do something way different now. Like, it would be way more cool if it was like an episode of Spooks where they're trying to find a traitor inside MI6 or something like that.
You know? There's so many stories you could tell. Yeah.
Let's not use villains from the past. Like, obviously, the Craig movies were very, very dependent on Blofeld. But let's not rely on villains. You know,
and doppelgangers of other,
Let's not recast Odd Job. Like, let's be
let's make new icons, right?
Yeah,
like, people shit on Spectre, and don't get me wrong, it's a like it or hate it movie, but it's like,
it's a hate it movie. Let's not get it twisted, fellas.
I'm not a fan.
It's terrible, and it's such a waste too, because in the minute we all saw that Christoph Waltz was Blofeld, we're all like, holy shit.
Yeah, that should have been a home
genius
run.
Yeah, anyway, I'm just saying Bautista stood out. Anyway, they need more henchmen that just stand out, as opposed to henchmen who are in like it or hate it movies. It's like, okay.
And that's probably one thing the Craig, other than Spectre, the Craig movies didn't have the sort of cliche Bond henchman that would obviously have the big fist fight with Bond.
I mean, Casino Royale works so good with the main villain, you know, Mads Mikkelsen. You know, he just bleeds from the eyes when he gets too nervous and worked up. And you're like, that's an interesting quirk. Unlike others where you're just like, okay, he's got a mechanical hand, or he's Scar Mango, he's got free nipples. I'm like, what?
And a golden gun.
And a golden gun. And yeah, we have a Wild West style shootout standoff. Okay.
I can't hate that movie, though, because it's got Christopher Lee, and that just makes me so happy.
It's
you can
half
hate
a good
it. It's
movie.
Okay.
It's half a good movie. Anyway, so why do you think everyone was just thinking, oh, they're going to go for the obvious, they're going to hire people we know? It's like, no, the whole point is you get a semi-known or an unknown to play James
Bond. I hope it's an unknown. I really do. Because that was one of the problems with Pierce Brosnan, because yes, he looks the part, but he was already so well known as like Remington Steele and some other things.
Yeah.
His star boosted as playing Bond, though. Like,
well, sure. But at the same time, I found him to be rather boring. It was safe and boring. I know it's fighting words. Remember, I'm an old man.
Oh, no, it's all good. No one can agree on Bond. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to get to where he ranks in pop culture. Yeah. So.
Right. Yes.
Because that's the other thing. Weird thing is, it's like, there's so many other characters that are played by different actors, and they just kind of lose any sense of just kind of fun after a while, because everyone just associates too often the actor. Like, Batman, I think, definitely is more harmful just based on just so many inconsistencies on who plays him, you know?
Yeah.
Or you get a good Bond, Dark Knight movie, but not a great Batman portrayal. So, half the time.
Yeah, but I think they do, like, they need to go not necessarily right back to the whole sort of over the top camp sort of style, the kind of late 70s, 80s, but, you know,
right,
let's have an element of both. Let's still have the sort of the Bourne franchise mixed with that to create like a modern day Bond. The Daniel Craig movies were just far too serious.
Agreed.
You know, they were just like really. And obviously that's what the movies are all about these days. They're quite, you know, that's the pattern of creating these sort of
dark and gritty,
high adrenaline action movies that are, you know, really, really to the point. But I mean, it's like, yeah, Craig made a few jokes here and there, and obviously bringing Ben Whishaw on as Q,
something dry, you know, or dark, just to kind of cut the tension every once in a while with a knife.
Yeah, but even when Daniel Craig made jokes as Bond, he was still very serious doing it.
Yeah, sometimes he wouldn't even do anything. He'd just give a shit-eating grin. Like, in almost every one, he lets out, like, at least one sly remark to where it's just kind of reminding you, is like, yeah, I'm a hitman who happens to work for a spy agency.
Let's bring the gadgets back as well. Yeah, he's got some gadgets in the Craig movies, but let's bring the old gadgets back. Let's bring the pens back. Let's go all
out. Yeah, like not invisible cars, but something more, a bit more believable. Right, I agree.
So, you know, I think let's go with an unknown actor. I mean, mm-hmm. people were saying, let's, you know, obviously the Idris Elba was one of the ones we didn't.
It'll never happen.
He's a great actor. I think he's probably too old, unless you're telling a certain story with a certain
He's a good actor, but he's a that's great the actor, other thing. I think he's, just like,
he's only like 3 years younger than Daniel Craig.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's like he's very similar in ages to Daniel Craig. So, I mean...
So now he'll be Daniel Craig's age when he finally gets to get in front of the camera for the first film. That's not going to happen.
Well, they got
to
do it to a screen. Like they got to film it.
It's come out.
Well, well, you know what? They could do something, just a new Bond, a new actor every movie. It doesn't have to be the same guy for 10 films.
As long as it's not Tom Hardy, I'm down.
Let's not make it a face that...
How about Michael Cera?
Do you hate life? But yeah, no, it's I've heard Cillian Murphy go around and it's like, you know, I'm surprised he didn't get an offer to play a Bond villain.
Yeah, I mean, I think having make it someone that's not necessarily known, because then you don't have that much expectation that, you right. know, if it's like a Tom, everyone knows what Tom Hardy is, can do, everyone knows Cillian Murphy, so make it someone that you're not necessarily familiar with. That way you don't know what you're going to expect. You know, it could be good, it could be bad, but, you know, Daniel Craig, again, people knew him before Bond, so...
but not enough to where, like, hey, it's the first name that comes out of our head.
Yes, I mean, like, have it somebody that you need to Google, like, when it gets announced to see who they are. That way, you don't know. I mean, it was similar when, obviously... when Henry Cavill became Superman,
auditioned like multiple times or something like that.
Yeah, there was probably not a lot of people that had seen Henry Cavill.
Yeah, I didn't know him.
Yeah, I mean, so that was good because, you know, it's like, well, I don't know. I don't have an opinion on this guy yet. So, I mean, it will be good or it will not be. So let's make it someone that you don't already have an opinion on. Everybody's got an opinion on Tom Hardy.
Also, the franchise is big enough. It doesn't need a big name to draw people in. James Bond is the name you need, not the actor.
That's very, very, very true. No, I mean, again, go back. No one gave a shit about it. I mean, Connery was a nobody. It only took place at that. And no one else that they had on there had any kind of real steam except for...
No one had seen his Brosnan
when they kind of had some kind of momentum. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Daniel Craig wasn't necessarily a big actor when he got the role. Yeah,
no.
He did certain things, but, you know, Bond sort of escalated him. So I mean, it doesn't have to be. Personally, I think if you make it a household name, then it will sort of tarnish the franchise a bit because, you know, they'll be typecast to that, and you know, like whatever we. Everybody could debate who the next Bond will be for hours and hours and hours. and dare I say...
Let's not go into stuff that's happening.
When it gets announced, there'll probably be split opinions, as there always is on everything. I mean, look, Robert Pattinson as Batman got split opinions when he was first announced. But
he's a very underrated actor. He's actually really good.
What I would say is, you know, until you've seen the movie... you know, don't have an opinion on something.
People were freaking out that Daniel Craig was blonde when he got cast.
Yeah, I know.
Well, and now they're freaking out that they're replacing him, and it's like, well, it's inevitable. Eventually, they're going to leave the franchise after 2 to 5 movies. So,
sure.
I learned my lesson when they said Heath Ledger was the Joker after coming off of fucking Brokeback Mountain, and then Dark Knight comes out. I'm like, well, I better shut my mouth from now on.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people out there can surprise you.
Yeah, and the classic one is everyone losing it over Michael Keaton being cast as Batman.
Oh, that's a good example.
Like being known as the comedic actor all his career, and then suddenly being in this role as the dark, mysterious Batman.
I think he's great.
Well, and that's it. And so many people, they don't know that. They're like, oh, we know him from that movie. It's like, at the time, he was known for being a comedian.
To portray my age, I was 14 when Batman came out.
I was 12 when it came out.
Okay. Yeah, so I was familiar with Keaton as the comedian and everything. You know, I mean, Beetlejuice is one of my favorite movies ever.
Oh, my God, I hate that film.
Really? Oh, no.
I hate that.
All right. Moving on.
Save that for the Michael Keaton podcast, right? or Tim Burton.
Guys, he's great. On. He's great as Beetlejuice. It's just all the other fucking superfluous bullshit, which is what I hate about
him. Anyway.
The five scenes that he's in as a title character of Beetlejuice.
Guys, yeah, that's... let's move on. Anyway, so yes, what you know the actor for varies on what they were initially known for. And we can only hope the franchise, you know, keeps taking chances as opposed to, well, you know, the Broccoli's are kind of having a, you know, identity crisis with what they want the franchise to be. Giving too many notes.
Yeah, it all starts with the story. They need a good story first. And
instead of, let's make it be like this, let's make it be like
exactly,
that. And right. Then make a denial. No, we're not trying to be like that. I'm like, you totally are trying to be like that. Mm-hmm. There's no way you're not.
Yeah, story is where it starts.
And I don't know if it's probably been done, with, like, you know, Uncharted's a prime example at the minute, but maybe like a young Bond, it might not appeal to everyone, but, you know, a young Bond, you know, training to be a double agent. Obviously, the Craig movie touched on that a slight bit, that he's, before the main title sequence, he's not a double agent until mm-hmm. he gets these two kills that makes him a double agent. But, you know, let's maybe have a Bond that isn't 007 yet. Bring back
filmmakers who have been with the franchise for a bit. You know, I would definitely like to see Martin Campbell just start it off with him again, but I think he burned some bridges. I don't know.
Yeah, and no one's going to forgive him for a Green Lantern.
That entry. Doesn't count. He was locked out of the studio on that one.
we're grateful to Martin Campbell for giving us The Mask of Zorro, though, which is an incredible movie.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
And, you know, so he GoldenEye and Casino Royale, Martin Campbell did. So, I mean,
he still got it with The Protégé. That was a great action movie that was just like a standout from last year. And everyone's just worried about numbers and box office. I don't know why anyone does that. This is like, unless you're the investor, why do you care how they marketed it and what money they made back?
Yeah, I care if the movie's good. I don't care how much money they're making.
Quality, not quantity.
I mean, true, if they make a lot of money, maybe you'll get more. But also sometimes, do you really want more? Because typically it's, you know.
Yeah, I can watch Kingsman because I think it's a perfect, like, Austin Powers Bond parody. I don't need Kingsman 2 or 3.
Right.
I have not yet had the heart in sitting in my DVR to watch The Kingsman. I've heard nothing but bad things about it.
what I would love in the next Bond movie to do is not fully reboot it. You know, like, I want to see Ben Whishaw staying as Q, but I don't know how they would do that in a non-Daniel Craig movie. You know, I liked Ray Fiennes as M. I thought
he's a good M,
casting choice.
Maybe he becomes the next Bond. I don't know.
Yes, I would like him to stay, but it's older, like, well, well, the Craig movies are in their own world now. So obviously, Judi Dench went through Pierce Brosnan and Daniel Craig. So she carried over, but I just think they've now sort of put the bubble wrap around Craig movies that you can't really touch it again and you can't really take anything out of it. But I don't never say never again.
Oh god, nice. Alrighty.
So I'll ask a question that you guys have been kind of dancing around. What about the rumors of the female Bond?
Just clickbait, dude. It wasn't gonna happen.
I mean, they were kind of sort of teasing it with this, but I again, maybe they would say, oh, you know what, in today's time, let's just make a woman Bond, double, you know, and roll with that. I guarantee you that would be the car falling off the cliff, because people are like, nope, Bond is a dude. If you want to have a female super agent, no problem. Have her be a completely different character in a completely different universe, but do not go down the James Bond route with a female Bond.
Those were just rumors.
I want to see strong female characters, definitely, but don't co-opt an existing character just to make it female. How is that empowering? You know,
you're 100% right. Look at
Ocean's 8. New character. You know, or get another character out of literature or something that hasn't been done, and co-opt it.
Well, I hate to keep going back to the Daniel Craig movies, but because they're so recent and they're probably the ones that people are associated more at the minute. You know, the Craig movies did a really good job of showing strong women in roles.
Yeah,
you
know, sure.
Eva Green is a Bond girl. She's really, really strong, independent as Vesper.
Give her her own great. Spy franchise.
She's one of my favorite Bond girls, for lack of a better
word. Skyfall. You have Naomi Harris. No, not Naomi Harris. Naomi Harris? No.
Moneypenny, you mean?
They can definitely get a Bond girl who doesn't shoot.
Yeah.
How about Xenia on a top? I mean, she was fucking a badass S&M kind of chick.
Jansen, yeah. Her Olga Kurylenko's kind of done her own kind of Bondish movies. There's a lot of them who you could have return and do some kind of cool thing. Michelle Yeoh would be cool.
Yeah, she's good. Definitely not Denise Richards as Dr. Christmas. That's laughable.
And you know, and Anna Lynch was incredible as 007 in No Time to Die. So I mean, they don't have to be James Bond to shine in a Bond movie.
Sean Bean had plenty of his own things. He didn't have to play 006 in every movie, you know.
You know, and it's difficult. I don't personally think they will go down the female Bond route. I think there's, well, 10 years ago I wouldn't have said that Doctor Who was going to be a female, and they did that, but there's certain roles you just can't mess with too much, and I think Bond's one of them.
There's just too much fandom and geekdom attached to it, where it's just like, it's too beloved an icon that just the slightest change, you're going to get as much an outburst as it would if you're doing an adaptation of Jesus. Just too much outcry, so
It would do more harm to the franchise than it would good, put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, let's not tamper with something that's not broken.
Yeah.
You know, it's working, so let's not tweak it. But you know, they're the money makers. So
the money makers. So Brendan, where can we find you on social media?
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter and Instagram. So, and also the real-review.com. Post loads film reviews and articles on there. On Twitter, I'm at Real Review 1, and then Instagram, Real Review 1 as well. So something I started over lockdown here in the UK 2 years ago, just to sort of solve the boredom.
Nice.
And you know, we've kicked on from there. So yeah,
kill that boredom, baby. Brendan, or not Brendan, Kevin, the Kevin dude who's
it's me, baby.
Stirring the pot. What are you gutting next? What's next on the Sacred Cow?
Gutting the Sacred Cow. Let me just give the pitch of the podcast. What we do is, we're unlike any other movie podcast out there. We invite guests, mainly other fellow comics and podcasters, to come on and pick a film that they find overrated or hate, and trying to convince us to see their argument. But here's the twist: the film must meet one of these characteristics. Widely beloved, critically acclaimed, financial success, and a bonus, of course, to make sure to have people actually get angry that you chose to gut this film. And we decide if they are successful or not with segments throughout the show. Episode this week we have airing is 16 Candles. Next week's episode is Parasite. And upcoming films people are going to attempt to gut: Return of the Jedi, Speed, Beverly Hills Cop, and get ready for this one, boys. Get ready for this one. Back to the Future. That's right. Someone hates the future. It is going to be bloodshed, I promised you.
Nice.
How much hate mail do you get?
Listen, sometimes we agree with them. Sometimes we say, it's okay. It's neither here nor there. And sometimes, like, no, you're a fucking asshole and you're wrong. And we just destroy them. And
nice.
We'll see. We'll see. So they'll get the guests get hate mail sometimes. That's for sure.
Nice. Retaliation, baby. So Jason, what is next on Genre Exposure?
Genre Exposure. We just dropped an episode. We're doing a block on Westerns.
Drop it like it's hot.
Yeah. We just did a movie called Brimstone.
Oh.
Which is sort of a horror. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Nice. One of us liked it a lot, one of us was and the other hated it, so it's actually pretty amusing.
I was
the next one drops in about 2 weeks. The next one's going to be a Western called Kioma, an old Italian spaghetti
Franco
Western,
Nero, right?
Franco Nero, exactly.
There you go. Okay, nice. Well, thank you all for being on here.
Thank you for having us,
the
man.
Bond community, it's more
fun. Thanks, man.
Nice. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Okay.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.